All right. Once again, welcome to the January 2019 meeting of the Transylvania County Planning Board. Our first item of business is public comment. Have anyone, would you like to make a comment, sir?
I'm good.
Okay, all right. It doesn't unless there's indivisible member here. We'll move on to the next item, approval of the agenda. You have the agenda before you. Entertain a motion to approve or amend the agenda, yes?
Would we like to move the Mountain Ridge Protection Permit up?
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
For the benefit of our members of the public?
Yeah, that works for me. So we want to move that to
old business?
Item A in old business? Or do we want to move the entirety of new business up? Let me have. Let's just move that item to item A under old business. So the proposed change will move what is currently item A under new business, move it up to item A under old business, and the subsequent items will move down one letter. We have that made in the form of a motion. Is there a second? Wait, we don't have that as a motion. That was a recommendation. Recommendation from staff?
Okay.
Recommendation.
All right, we've got a motion and a second. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign. All right. So we have the agenda approved. We've had a chance to review the meetings from our December meeting, the minutes from our December meeting. I hear a motion to approve or amend those.
Motion to approve.
Approve and second. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign. All right. All right, next item is subdivision approvals and updates. Joy?
Since our December 13th meeting, there have been 4 recombinations of previously approved lots, 7 changing boundary lines between adjoining property owners, 1.5 exception, which is where an individual inherits a portion of a lot through a will, 2 1.6 family subdivisions, and 1 existing lot reviewed for as a review officer. No subdivisions were reviewed and held this morning, which is not included on this date.
Oh,
so.
All right. Anyone have any questions? Bob, are you good?
Yeah, I was just looking at somebody that I knew here. This is okay. Nelson Lockdale.
Yes, yes. All right. Moving on to item 6 for the amended agenda, we'll consider the Mountain Ridge Protection Permit. Turn it over to Joy.
In your packets, you received the permit form and some supporting documentation. We received an application from the McGuire Corp for U.S. Cellular to build a 154-foot tower on a protected mountain ridge. In December, the county commissioners approved a variance for this tower to be located where it's proposed, with the condition that we get a completed NEPA document, which we are still waiting due to the review of the federal government and the shutdown. Therefore, the next step, once the county commissioners approve the variance, was for the applicant to submit a Mountain Ridge Protection Permit. Because when the Mountain Ridge Protection Ordinance was updated in 2018, cell towers were not exempt from that ordinance because Planning Board knew that they were prohibited on protected mountain ridges in the telecommunication tower ordinance. There was discussion about exempting them, and the Planning Board chose to keep it where if they received a variance, they could be permitted, and therefore they would not be exempt. For the Mountain Ridge Protection Permit, It is designed to ensure that there is adequate water supply, good sewage disposal, adequate engineering for safety so it doesn't fall over in bad weather. It ensures that there is not an air navigation hazard and not a hazard to a person on the ground near the structure. It also, the intent of the ordinance is also to ensure the aesthetic value of the protected mountain ridges are sustained. As such, part of the permit requirements are not applicable to this permit because there is no water or sewer required for this. And so we don't, the applicant did not provide or were they required to provide letters showing that they met those requirements because there are none. However, in the telecommunication tower packet, they did provide the required surveys, the required photo renderings, the required engineering to certify that it was structurally sound for the proposed development, and therefore they have a permit that is complete for the Mountain Ridge Protection Ordinance. Earlier today, I sent out an email of communication between Mr. Huxley Coulter and myself regarding the definition of a tall structure. Since that time, I have spoken with the county attorney, and when the ordinance was updated in September, staff interpreted the definition to mean that if a building stuck up over the top of the crest more than 35 feet, it was a tall structure. If you look at the North Carolina General Statutes, it goes on to say that the tall structure does not include water towers, cell phone towers, and the lake. When the original ordinance was adopted, cell towers were not included as being exempt. And when you all reviewed it, you discussed how definitions are definitions and regulations are the meat of the ordinance. And therefore, instead of including that fire towers and historic structures were not tall buildings in the definition, you exempted them from the regulation, so you moved them. It is open to interpretation, but as it stands, the staff recommends that you consider the cell tower as a tall structure, and because it meets the requirements of the permit, you review it as a tall structure and consider approving it.
Okay. We have, please, just for our benefit, review the recommendation from staff.
The recommendation is to approve this Mountain Ridge Protection Permit.
Okay. All right. Yes, sir, go ahead.
Now, why do we want to call that a tall structure?
Because it's greater than 40 feet.
I mean, the structure itself is greater than 40 feet.
Right.
Because it's 150 plus 4 feet for the lightning rod.
Right.
But it's going to project above the ditch.
It will.
About 100 feet.
By approximately 120.
And so that's why we're having to consider it, because it's less, far greater than 35 feet above the mountain ridge.
It is. The county attorney did mention that federal law makes it such that it's hard to prohibit cell towers if they meet the regulations set forth. And so there's a question of, does this meet it? Is staff's interpretation of the it being a tall structure and the stipulation of allowing the, when you look at a mountain, it's not flat. When you build a house on the mountain, it's not flat. And so when staff looked at the definition, staff interpreted it being, you have these things in the definition to allow for a structure, if the structure was built on a protected mountain ridge, and the top of the foundation and the top of the roof is 35 feet, it would stick up over the top of the ridge by 35 feet. But it would be considered a tall structure based on the definition of a tall structure. And sometimes you can't really easily quantify that on an uneven surface.
So that means every tall structure that comes before the planning board would have to have come up for an exemption.
Not necessarily. So when you look at the definition of a ridge, remember the 100 feet in elevation. So if the top of your protected mountain ridge is 3,600 feet, a tall structure between 3,600 feet and 3,500 feet require a permit if it's near a protected mountain ridge. And therefore, a 40-foot structure that is set on the contour line of 35-50 is not going to stick up above the ridge by 35 feet.
It'd be 10 feet below.
Exactly. And so there are circumstances where it won't stick up over the ridge. But when the ordinance was being updated, staff did not interpret that as a prohibition to tall structures sticking up greater than 35 feet. They interpreted as being structures that stuck up greater than 35 feet were considered tall structures.
Okay, so that's why we want to leave things under tall structures.
Right.
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure it out.
So this has gotten a variance approved, correct?
By the county commissioners.
By the county commissioners, and that variance, what, can you remind me what that encompassed again?
So we have a telecommunication tower ordinance.
Right.
That regulates how telecommunication towers are built in Transylvania County. Again, it ensures that they are structurally sound and that they have the landowner's approval to be built, and that they have access, and that neighbors have an opportunity to know that it's happening through public notice. However, that telecommunication tower ordinance prohibits telecommunications on protected mountain ridges. In Transylvania County, when the Mountain Ridge Protection Ordinance was updated to include all of the ridges identified by the North Carolina Geodetic Survey, it created a protected mountain ridge that included the Rich Mountain Gap Ridge. That ridge currently has five towers located on it. One is Verizon, one is State Police, one is County EMS, one is Duke Energy, and one was the 80-foot radio tower that's going to be replaced. If you look at the 100 feet in elevation requirement, Fox Tower could also be on that, which would be the sixth tower. So we have one protected mountain ridge in Transylvania County that has existing structures on it. Because several of those existing structures are very important for the safety of residents, for all residents, the county commissioners chose to grant a variance to replace an existing tower with a new tower, even if the new tower was a cell tower. By definition, any tower over 50 feet, that is radio, TV, cell towers, communication towers, is a telecommunication tower. So if it's over 50 feet, then it requires a permit from telecommunication tower ordinance. The county commissioners granted that to this tower in December.
And that was under the telecommunications ordinance,
right.
Not the...
Right. Once they granted that variance for the tower to be built on the protected mountain ridge, it triggered the need for a protected mountain ridge permit. So you have already seen this tower. The county commissioners have granted the variance to be built on the protected mountain ridge. And so you are considering the protected mountain ridge permit.
So that's how come this is back before.
That's how come it's back before you.
I've been wondering that.
Yes. it's because it received a variance and then it needed another permit.
And it needs another permit.
Because it's not exempt from the mountain ridge protection ordinance.
So that's the next question. I'm trying to formulate the question. The county lawyer and staff believes that even though this exceeds the 35-foot limit, because of its kind of special use, it's sort of exempt without requiring another... What I'm asking is, does it require another variance under this steep ridge or the ridgetop ordinance legally? Or does it not? It sounds like it does not. It's up to us, maybe.
There is not a variance procedure in the Mountain Ridge Protection Ordinance. There is an appeals procedure.
Okay.
So your decision can be appealed to the county commissioners.
Okay, great.
And so there's no variance. If it meets the intent of the ordinance of not harming water supply, not polluting through sewage contamination, not being a hazard to air navigation, not being a hazard to people on the ground due to bad weather or bad engineering, and not destroying the aesthetic values of the mountain ridge, because they have all the pieces of the permit that is required, staff recommends that you consider approving it.
Got it.
Well, I heard you say that under the federal government rules, we can't prohibit it. Is that right?
That is very likely.
Okay.
Yes.
What are there any state rules that...
The state supports the federal guidelines.
Okay.
They call it out in the North Carolina general the legislation that addresses telecommunication towers. And that's why there is a variance procedure in the telecommunication tower ordinance. So this is a weird case.
Mm-hmm.
And the county attorney would like to look at those two ordinances in conjunction with each other and maybe address this.
Yeah.
But at this time, we have two ordinances that are in effect, and we have to work within them.
So if we approve this tonight, then the next step is?
We wait to receive a completed NEPA document. When we receive that, if it's clear, if there is no finding of adverse impact to rare or threatened species, then we issue a permit. And then they can get a building permit.
But there is an appeal process in there.
True.
Someone
could appeal.
If you say, okay, put the tower up tonight, then our decision can be appealed to the commissioner.
It can be.
Okay, I got it.
Yep.
And at that elevation, and given that topography up there, having dealt with NEPA on farms and all that, I seriously doubt there's going to be any kind of NEPA reservations up there.
I do too, based on the development that has already taken place up there, and because it's replacing an existing tower, the ground has already been disturbed significantly there. And
see, that even takes into account cultural resources.
That's true.
And so, yeah.
So, as staff to the Joint Historic Preservation Commission, we review it for archaeological or historical significant structures.
All right. Is there a motion to approve the permit?
Make a motion.
So moved.
Motion and you mind yours being a second? Bob?
You what?
You mind yours being a second?
Oh, that's fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Motion and second on the floor to approve the permit. Any further discussion? All those in favor of approving the permit indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, like sign. All right. Motion carries. And Mac and Kinsey, we had amended the agenda.
Okay.
And moved new business item A to item A under old business. Okay. Just shifted down the other old business. So. Okay. All right. Watershed ordinance, Matt.
I just want to say thank you very much.
Thank you.
We are only missing, just you know, from the NEPA point, we're only missing the Cherokee track. Everything else has been approved and flushed through and just Cherokee.
And then how do you keep a hotel room here?
I do stay at a Holiday Inn. That's a nice one.
So with the building permit, it's approved, how long is it going to take?
I've had a lot of people ask that.
Really?
About a month. So, as soon as the federal government decides to go back to work, we're going to get it. That's what's kind of holding us up right here.
It's holding a lot of stuff up, for sure.
Yeah.
Thanks, sir. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
All right. Watershed ordinance, Matt.
In addition to the map, you also received a copy of the ordinance one more time. So we will start with the map. At the last planning board meeting, I shared a concern over the possibility that the South Mills River watershed could be extending partially out of the National Forest, and you all asked that I go look at surveys and see if there were surveys available. There was one parcel in particular that I was concerned about, and I estimated there could be as much as 6 acres impacted. I found a survey of that parcel in the Register of Deeds office, and the survey clearly delineates the boundary of that parcel as being the mountain ridge. And when water hits the top of a mountain ridge, it flows downhill. So if it hits the top of the mountain ridge on the Mills River watershed, then it will flow into the Mills River. But if the mountain ridge is the boundary, I don't have any questions or qualms about certifying that the Mills River watershed is entirely in the National Forest based on that survey. And that was my hesitation, that if we submitted the map with just the Cathy's Creek watershed, staff in the county would have to certify that it was entirely in National Forest land. Based on the topography and the surveys of the parcel, I believe that we are safe following the recommendation from 1997 of not including it because it's entirely in Forest Service.
Okay.
So that is why your map only has Cathy's Creek in it.
Now, Joy, the 93 photo was one that was in error showing Transylvania County being in part of the Mills River watershed, right?
Based on the state's data, there's not an error that it's in Transylvania County. The error is, or the confusion of jurisdiction. We don't have jurisdiction on federal land. Therefore, if there is a watershed in Transylvania County that is entirely on federal land, it doesn't do any good to include it in our watershed map, because we don't have jurisdiction over it.
So you're saying that part of that could still be in the Transylvania County, but...
It is.
But because of being on U.S. land, and all that, it's a moot point.
It's a moot point.
Okay.
Our regulations do not apply to it, and therefore it's not included on the map.
That simplifies it. Mm-hmm. It really does.
That makes good sense. Can't do anything.
And will the is the map officially part of the ordinance?
It will be part of the ordinance.
Okay.
And remember, the whole ordinance has to go to the Environmental Management Commission, the EMC. So there is a possibility that they could say, hey, why didn't you include this other watershed? And that's why I'm thankful that you all said, go look at the surveys, because it makes me comfortable answering their questions. Yes.
All right. Wonderful.
Always a good question.
So we don't have any necessary action to take. That was an update.
You all asked at the last meeting that I look at two definitions in addition to the map.
That's right.
Therefore, we do not have a motion to send it to the county commissioners yet.
Okay.
When reviewing the stormwater best management or the stormwater manual that the state adopted in 2017, it referenced a statute that defines built upon area. And so the draft that you received in your packet was only the two pages that included the definitions that were changed based on North Carolina general statute. One is the built upon area, which I decided to go verbatim for North Carolina general statute.
Might as well.
I did not.
We can take a look at that one.
Oh, yeah.
Consider. Go ahead and finish. I'm sorry. Before we. Instead of looking at both of them, we'll look at each one.
Okay. You also requested that I find a definition for cluster development. I did not find an official definition of cluster development. If you look at communities across the country, there's different definitions. And there's not one in that general statute or other general statutes that apply to water that define cluster development. But when I was looking at definitions, I did not see a stormwater definition. And we use stormwater throughout this document. And so the stormwater definition from the North Carolina General Statute was added. So those are the two definitions that I would like you all to look at tonight.
Let's consider definition 1.7, built upon area, first. Does anyone have any questions about that? You all let me know when you're okay to move on from that one.
Oh, cluster development. I did find a definition in the model ordinance.
Okay.
It included minimizing stormwater runoff impacts, which is why it's in gray. Sorry. So when you're ready to move on.
Okay. Good.
They're saying that the number 57 stone has to be over geotextile fabric. Most residents don't use geotextile fabric. They should. It would save them years of gravel down the road, but they don't.
Would that have any bearing on compaction? Does the geotextile fabric reduce compaction?
All the fabric does is distribute weight.
Okay. So could that impact the spaces between the gravel?
Mac, what do you think? If you put number 57 over AB over geotextile, it's going to improve infiltration and distribute weight. But what else?
It really would. The water would penetrate it better without the fabric.
because the fabric creates a barrier.
Even though it's needle punched, there's a finite surface area
right.
in that fabric.
Okay.
Runoff. Yeah.
That is how it is in North Carolina General Statute.
We wouldn't have any authority to change that if that's in the North Carolina statute, would we?
That's how it's defined.
Do what?
That's how it's defined
oh,
in the statute.
Right.
I think we could define it differently.
Yes, and you have previously.
Yeah.
Theoretically, when you look at an acre's land and you look at the amount of gravel roads that are going to service so many houses on an acre of land, it's not that much surface area. It theoretically could be almost considered a moot point, but they're nailing it down to geotextile fabric, and 90% of the public doesn't use it. So it may not be anything we even need to worry about. But
you're right. I mean, we could strike that part out. It really wouldn't make any difference as far as runoff goes, for sure.
Yeah, we could just strike out over a geotextile fabric. And then if they have geotextile fabric, that's all well and good. But if they don't, same difference. Does that make sense?
It does. I'm fine with, if you want to make a motion to amend.
What about if we put with or without geotextile fabric?
That's even better. How to work.
And then somebody doesn't say, well, if you use fabric, then it doesn't count.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that a motion?
Sure. All right, we have a motion. Here, a second.
Second.
All right, so this, the motion on the floor is to amend the built upon area. It will read a surface. I'm gonna go down to the area in question.
There's number first as designated blah blah blah, blade at least 4 inches thick and strike over a geotextile fabric. Right.
That's my understanding. It'll say laid at least 4 inches thick with
with
or without a geotextile textile fabric.
That's what I was saying. Yeah.
Is that okay?
A trail is defined in some way. You shook your head. Is that not what we should do?
No, that's fair.
Okay.
All right. You all are the decision makers.
And keep in mind, too, this is a definition, not a necessarily an enforcement area, but a definition.
It will lend staff guidance on what is expected.
All those will consider this motion that we don't necessarily have to move on from the definition, just considering this change. Everyone's clear on the change?
This is
all green
to me, so
nothing
you know.
Number 57 stone is just clean, like washed, clean 3/4 inch stone without any fines or anything.
Your average typical.
Right.
And on incline, most people will put ABC. Trying to go up an incline on 57, I'd ride no ball bearings. Did that help clarify?
All right. All those in favor of adding the with or without geotextile fabric, indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, like sign. Okay. Carries. Any other changes? Recommendations to.
So the 1.8 was because I did not find any reference in North Carolina General Statute, I went back to the model watershed ordinance.
I hadn't moved on from
one. Sorry,
that's okay. That's okay.
Okay.
No problem.
I keep jumping ahead.
Yeah. I was making sure we don't have
anything
else in there. Everybody else okay with the rest of the definition?
Okay.
Okay, now we're ready to go on the 1.8. Have at it.
said it twice. I'll say it again. North Carolina General Statute did not provide me any guidance on cluster development definitions, but the Watershed Model Ordinance by the Division of Water Resources had that piece that's in gray, including minimizing runoff impacts. So the cluster development is buildings grouped together to conserve land resources and provide for innovation in project design, including minimizing stormwater runoff impacts.
Any proposed changes?
I just need to ask a question.
All right.
So, planned unit development and mixed use development, why wouldn't those be considered as cluster development? I mean, or why would they be?
They are.
Okay, but now, previously they were considered maybe not cluster development?
They are different terms. So planned unit development often comes before a planning board in areas where there's zoning, where they are looking to get more density in one area of the parcel and less density elsewhere. That's the same thing as cluster development. But it can be used in different circumstances to mean similar things, but not exactly the same. But for our purposes, because it allows more dense development in one area of the parcel to allow for more natural areas in potentially sensitive areas or to reduce stormwater runoff impacts, it has the same intent here. Mixed-use development, again, in a county without zoning, we don't prohibit commercial from being included in residential areas. But mixed-use development is where there's different uses all in the same area. So someone developing a subdivision may put a general store there, may put a gas station there for the residents.
Like the Davidson property down here would be mixed use.
Exactly. And so for the purpose of this ordinance, planned unit development and mixed use development are considered cluster development.
That helps me understand.
We okay with that definition?
Okay.
That will move us over to 127.
I just need to verify that 1/2 mile upstream, that's as the creek runs and not straight line air miles, right?
If you look at the map of Cathy's Creek, there's a point at the intake and a line drawn out 1/2 mile and a semicircle created. Now the boundary of that is going to be the watershed boundary.
Okay. The reason I'm asking is because when the state tried to pull a fast one and change the designation of the creek over here on the other side of Little Mountain.
Boston Creek,
you know, there was a lot of hubbub about whether it was a straight line mile
right.
or a river mile. And it
right.
ended up being decided that was a river mile.
Right.
So that's what this is, right?
The 1/2 mile, the critical area is what is defined. When we first started talking, it is defined for water supply watersheds in watersheds 1 and watersheds 2 as that area that drains the water intake. It does not clarify whether it's 3 miles or as the crow flies. The two owners in the critical area, well, there are potential boundaries with other owners in the critical area, but the two primary owners are the National Forest and City of Brevard. And then there are about 10 to 12 additional owners that abut the boundary and may have a smidgen in it, but not much.
So we're going to assume that's that is as the crow flies mile.
Because it's a half mile and it's used all across North Carolina, I would assume so.
Okay. So it's okay to have a difference in clarification as it relates to classifying streams as a river mile, but on a watershed it's an air mile. Or, you know what I'm saying, it's as the crow flies.
Would make a difference.
It makes a difference.
Well, it could. It made a difference on Boylston Creek.
Yeah.
But that was under a different set of circumstances. That was for trout water classification.
I remember that. I remember reading that.
And it could be, Joy, that these two might not be able to be congruent because they're dealing with two different things.
They might be.
So,
One's dealing with a stream and the other's dealing with the watershed.
Yeah. Exactly.
It just about has to be an air mile.
Yeah, I agree. I'd assume it's an air mile because it's encompassing the area
right
outside of the creek.
Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. Yeah,
okay, that's good.
Because it's not just that line, that whole half mile of the watershed. Yeah.
Okay.
All right, 127, stormwater. Joy had explained to us that that's used throughout, and we hadn't defined it, so this is an addition. Everybody okay with that definition?
Okay.
All right. Okay, with that, we need a motion to approve the updates, changes to the Watershed Protection Ordinance and send it to the County Commissioners for consideration.
So moved. Second.
Moved and second. Any discussion? I'll just say thank you to everyone for your time and effort and patience with this one. Thank you to staff. Wonderful job. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, like sign. Motion carries. All right. Pennsylvania County Bike Plan.
You all want the presentation that the contractor provided to the Transportation Advisory Committee. So you get to see pieces of it and discuss it. Or do you want to just discuss it?
What's the pleasure of the board?
Do you want a visual up here? That's the difference.
I would prefer
a
visual.
Yeah.
I want to say, I read a lot of it I skimmed over. I'll be honest, I didn't read every word. There's a surprise, right? I hate to be in a beginner, but some of these studies and whatnot, there's different ways to do studies and research. If you know what you want the outcome to be when you start, if you do it a different way than if you really don't know. And I'm suspicious of some of the conclusions they came to. Don't misunderstand me. I'm not totally against bikes. I am concerned about bikes in some areas in this county. I'm surprised we haven't had people killed. It's only because of two things. One, most of the bike riders are good people and are aware. most of the drivers tend to give them away. There are a few from both sides that I wonder about. My worst fear was one day I came upon a group, and I live on a road that's like that, came upon a group that I could see once I the curb in the middle of the road having a combat. Coming from the other direction, I didn't have a choice but to stop. Well, I had a choice. I could have run over them. I could stop. And I chose to stop. I couldn't go around them because I couldn't see over the hill. And they were not too receptive to my request to move the hell out of the road. There was a driveway there. They could have been, you know, parked in that driveway and having their combat. But that, it, things like that, sooner or later, we are going to have a problem if both sides don't look after each other. And I,
yes,
of course, I'm not a bicyclist, so I'm a little bit prejudiced. I admit that. I'm also a guy that wonder why they're out riding a bicycle when they need to be home mowing the lawn. I suspect they'd get more exercise mowing the lawn than whatnot. But at any rate, I understand we need this. But I am a little bit suspicious of some of the conclusions that I read in there. And whatever.
So the intent of having a plan is when there are priority routes identified in the plan, when NCDOT proposes a road improvement, one of the alternatives they present to the public includes the type of infrastructure identified in the plan.
It includes a bicycle plan.
It does. It includes bicycle infrastructure. North Carolina DOT has a complete streets policy. If you read it, it applies within the city limits. Outside the city limits of Brevard, complete streets in Transylvania County is a paved shoulder. That's it. And so if there are routes that, that based on congestion of motorists and the frequency that cyclists use it and the speed that warrant a dedicated bicycle lane, then it's recommended that when NCDOT improves those routes, they consider a dedicated bicycle lane, which provides one extra foot of room to pass the cyclist or for the bicyclist to use. Now, for a bicyclist to use that, those lanes have to be maintained.
Yes.
So in the plan, you have an introduction, you have existing conditions, you have recommendations, which are both infrastructure recommendations and program recommendations, and then you have implementation. There is also an appendix. And so some of the Chapter 3 recommendations, you have to go to the appendix to see, like the policy recommendations, to for all of the groups to consider, or the county commissioners to consider. And so at the public input meetings, we heard a lot of what you just shared.
Okay.
And therefore, this is a draft. Your recommendations tonight will be incorporated. The recommendations from the public input sessions will be incorporated. And one of those recommendations is that the Watch For Me program is not enough. That the Watch For Me program is a media campaign that is a partnership between local agencies and NCDOT that is mostly media. There are stickers. It also comes with enforcement events. But it's not enough to get at that contention between motorists and drivers. And so one of the recommendations from the public input sessions will be to add more, either in the implementation or in the programmatic recommendations, more education pieces, more communication pieces.
Yeah. I've seen a number of bicycles
right
north stop signs.
Right. So chapter one, just the project background, the planning process, the vision and goals, the value of bikeable communities. The vision and goals came from a variety of people. Some ride bikes, some don't. It included the chief of police. It included Clark Lovelace. It included David Joyce. It included Jimmy Whitmire. And a variety of people saying, what do they hope to see come out of this? The value of bikeable communities, the numbers that you have in there, there is a question of why are there different numbers? The studies that are done usually do show the economic value of bikeable communities. But different studies show different economic impacts from those. What is it specifically for Transylvania County? Chapter 2 looks at the existing conditions. So it looked at all of the plans that have been for Transylvania County and surrounding counties. It looked at the bicycle level of comfort. So there's different types of cyclists. My 9-year-old is not going to go out in the middle of 276 and ride a bike. Part of that is my level of comfort. Part of that is his. But a cyclist that you see on a regular basis, they're going to be on 276 without any hitch. Looking at bicycle crashes, looking at public input from June. So there were 4 public input sessions conducted in June. With a blank map, people were able to say what their priorities were. What would you like to see? And it looked at where cyclists are cycling now. Mountain bikers and road bikers. So all of that background data was used by the contractor, hired by NCDOT, paid for a grant that Transylvania County received, to create a plan, a draft plan, that you all reviewed. Chapter 3 is the bicycle facility types. I found that in the public input meetings, language matters, and shared use path spines were not always understood. In the bicycle world, shared use paths are the same thing as multi-use paths, and they can either be side paths next to a road, or they can be greenways where they're not next to a road. And so a shared use path is a generic term to use for all of those, but not everyone knows that. And is that something that needs to be more explicitly identified in the plan?
Like whether the greenway is going to be between the road and the bikers?
So,
because I didn't see that it was anywhere.
So this is a side path where you can see it outside the Blue Ridge Community College, where the bike path is right next to the road.
Right.
And there can be a little bit of separation. But then there's a greenway where it's not next to a road. So if it was to go,
it'd be like the bike path behind the hospital there. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. And in the public input sessions, we used shared use path to mean both of those. That created some issues, but in June, people voted with dots on which type of infrastructure they wanted to see more of. Overwhelmingly, shared use paths and greenways were what they wanted to see, which is why in the draft plan there is that group of projects that include the Brevard to Rosman shared use path, which could go in the US 64 right of way between Brevard and Rosman. There is the Acusta Trail. which is on the old rail line. You all had the presentation on the Yakuza Trail. There's the Lake Toxaway Trail that was identified in the Lake Toxaway Plan that Historic Toxaway did. There's the Cedar Mountain Shared Use Path. And then there's the NC-280 Shared Use Path. And so they were recommended in the plan because they were identified in other areas, either through public input or other plans or somehow. And so they tried to represent all the spokes coming out of the county seat. The bike lanes, we had public input in June that said we don't need dedicated bicycle lanes. Right-of-way for that extra foot is a concern. And so let's only have those where essential. So on 178, on 276, on these areas that get a lot of traffic and a lot high speed, a dedicated bicycle lane may be beneficial, but let's reduce the impact to property owners by having a paved shoulder on other roads where the speed limit's lower, where it's less of a fatality potential if you do hit them. So the priority projects had buckets. They had the shared use path. The shared use path bucket. The bike route bucket. So the roads that are used in the Transylvania County Tourism Development Authority's ride map and are used by cyclists on a regular basis, those are identified as priorities for bike routes. However, in that recommendation, there's room that not all of them need a dedicated bike lane because of the traffic and the speed and the background. And then there is the Brevard-Transylvania County interface. Brevard has determined that they are going to build their shared use path network or bike path network, whatever term you want to use, over the next 3 or 4 years. How do roads coming into Brevard benefit from that, and how do they meet? So if Brevard has a sidewalk, does it make sense for there to be a dedicated bicycle lane? Bikes usually aren't appreciated on sidewalks.
Right.
So the type of infrastructure that is recommended in those situations depends on where it's at and what the connection will be. And so in that pot of money, or that pot of infrastructure projects, there are not specifics identified.
That having the bike lane next to the travel lane is pretty iffy. My last abode of residence was in a very populous county in South Florida,
mm-hmm.
otherwise known as Broward, and they spent a lot of money putting bicycle lanes next to, in some cases, three lanes of traffic. If you saw a bicycle on one of those bicycle lanes, you wanted to stop and take a picture because you might not ever see another. But a lot of money was spent on that, and whether it will be good in the future, I hope so. Immediately, it was the usual amount of stuff in the paper about why, you know, was the money wasted on those lanes when they could have been used for other roads.
And one of the feedback points that we heard during the last round of public input that ended on Tuesday was that those bicycle lanes need some separation, whether it's those poles
or
whether
it's
space,
for safety reasons.
Because that's what you're seeing in other countries that makes them used and makes them successful, is that separation. Now, thinking about how roads are developed in Transylvania County in North Carolina, most of these projects are 10 years out. Is that going to be the norm of NCDOT in 10 to 20 years? Is that separation going to be the norm?
Hopefully. If we're going to have bicycle lanes.
We're going to have bicycle lanes, hopefully. So, is the plan specific enough to identify priority routes, but leave the exact type of infrastructure up to the people who are making the decision when that road is improved? The people who live along that road, the people who come out to give NCDOT feedback. That is my question as a staff.
Even though those lanes are a whole lot safer, purchasing the area required for that, the width, and in our mountainous terrain, that could be several thousand tons of rock to be moved for however wide that bike lane is.
Paved shoulder?
Coast.
To meet the federal highway regulations, NCDOT has to have paved shoulders that are 4 foot wide on U.S. highways. So U.S. 178, U.S. 276, U.S. 64, 4 foot wide pavement. Bicycle lanes are 5 feet, so that's an extra 2 feet of right-of-way and gravel.
And my gosh, there's places on 276 where the guardrail is not a foot outside the white line.
Right. And so if you look at the programs, it's not working with me today.
It's not being nice.
It's not.
Got a really short time on it.
If you look at the program recommendations, one of them is to research the design for bicycle passing lanes. NCDOT, as a statewide system, will not install passing lanes for bicycles because there's no engineering guidance on how wide, how long, how they can be installed safely. But that makes sense in our county where there are only two spots on 178 where the bicycle needs to get over, maybe more than that. But if a bicycle lane could be used in those two spots instead of the entire length of the road when it gets improved, that would save significant money and right-of-way. And so one of the program recommendations is to research or advocate for researching this potential. And so that's why the infrastructure and the programs really, they tie together.
So the improvements that the DOT showed us, was it last year, that aren't going to take effect until 2021 on 64 and all that, they had the bike lanes, I think, right on the road, I think, didn't they? But that doesn't necessarily, it's not as in stone, right? Or is it?
It is. So that's the thing. This plan is coming out after Wilson Road design has been set. US 64 design has been set. The roundabout of Pisgah Forest has been set. It's a little bit late. But the city of Brevard had bicycle pedestrian plan in place and adopted for that stretch of 64 through the city of Brevard that's getting improved between Brevard College and Food Matters. Wilson Road will just have paved shoulders. Paved shoulders. 4 foot wide paved. I think 4 foot. It might be less than that, but I think it's 4 foot. The recommendations of this plan will be used in future road design, maybe, if it's adopted by the county commissioners. It may also be used as the county looks at a comprehensive transportation plan. So I mentioned the comprehensive transportation plan that will begin. I expected it to be on the Board of Commissioners agenda in December, but due to the full agenda and the availability of the Rural Planning Organization staff coordinator, Vicki Eastland. It's on the agenda for the 28th. But the Comprehensive Transportation Plan looks at all types of transportation, including bikes, motorists, RVs, boats, pedestrians, and tries to look at design, high-level designs, not engineering designs. But should it be a bike lane? Should it be a paved shoulder? Should it be a bike passing lane? Should it, you know? And so there are, if this is adopted, it may be incorporated into that if the working group decides so.
I'm sorry, but what's a bike passing lane?
That's the one that's not approved yet. That would need research.
How would it work? I can't picture it.
You know how when you're coming up Caesar's Head,
uh-huh.
and they got those pull offs for slower traffic,
uh-huh.
that nobody ever uses? Be like that, right?
It would be.
You'd have a pull off for the bikes to stop.
Oh, to
so
stop.
So people could go around them.
Oh, okay.
Like when you drive up,
bikes passing cars.
Yeah,
when you drive up 276 toward the parkway and you follow a bicycle for an hour and you go by all those paid pull offs that they stay out in the middle of their lane when they go by.
Okay, because if they stop, they can't keep
yes.
going.
Well, I think,
and I can understand that. But.
It's going to be tough.
Well, but I think the main thing is all these bicyclers have biking computers, and they're in these virtual races with all their friends, and you know, it plots their times, and it's like stage racing, basically. Huh. Like you go up 276 today, and a year later, I can race you because we have the same biking computer. So they don't pull over because they're pretending they're Lance Armstrong.
I have heard some cyclists say I would absolutely use it if it was 100 feet long and allowed me to get out of the way of traffic and merge
yeah.
back in.
Yeah, that was pretty short. Right.
And I have heard other cyclists say that scares me to death because if there are 10 cars behind me, how am I going to pull back over? You know, where is
well,
that?
You wait till all the cars go by.
And so that's the question of what would the design be?
Then you lose the race.
That way they can take their
so,
kids with them and camp.
So I know going up 276 on emergency traffic going up towards the parkway, a lot of times you come around a curve and there they are.
Yeah, that's what
yep.
scares me. That's
yep.
I can't imagine we haven't had somebody run over.
That's
in that situation.
Well,
we have had 17.
I thought there was a fatality in Boston Grove a couple of years ago.
And the bike crash data may only be available until 2015. And so if it was 2 years ago, we may not have that. And there's concern of, is it a bike accident or a bike crash? Or how is that put into the system? Is that included in the numbers? Talking with David Carter, who some of you may know, he's on the Transportation Advisory Committee. He's like, the number of bike crashes is significantly higher than the data says. Because of how the troopers put the data in.
I know we've had them out by DuPont, right there at the High Falls entrance, where the bikers had actually hit cars coming out.
Huh.
We had one 2 years ago. I mean, he got his bell rung.
So some of the key recommendations in the plan are to keep the momentum on the bicycle projects that are already in development. So the Wilson Road, the Asheville Highway, the Pisgah Forest intersection, the improvement of Avery Creek, or the improvement of 276 up to Avery Creek. Keep that momentum going. Those are the low-hanging fruit. They're already in design. And yeah, Wilson Road is included because of the pay shoulders. And then strategically and proactively fund and build priority projects. It's going to depend on the pot of funding that's used. If it's NCDOT, or if it's a grant, or if it's a nonprofit who chooses to purchase it and develop it. You know, there's all kinds of ways that you can implement these projects. And then using the comprehensive network of recommendations to build other projects incrementally over time. And implement new programs and policies that support and encourage bicycling. And then here, the projects and development are highlighted. I forgot the Davidson River Village Connector, or Davidson Village Connector, number six here.
Oh, there will be bike path on here too.
There will be bike lanes, and the bridge that goes over is wide enough for pedestrians and cyclists.
Where is it?
Behind Lowe's, connecting 64 to 64.
Nothing's happening.
The landfills, where they had to cross, created some issues.
Oh. Can't tell them what was in there.
Right.
It'll look used to landfill. Can't tell what was in there.
I mentioned the shared use path signs that were identified in the plan. The Lake Coxaway path, the Rodman to Brevard, the Acusta Trail, NC-280 to Mills River, and Cedar Mountain. This is the presentation that was provided in December. Since then, those numbers have been changed to symbols to show that they are not prioritized against each other. The projects that get developed are those that have funding and are identified by the community as being the greatest need.
Those are considered basically shovel ready.
No, hardly.
But funding for shovel ready.
No. There is no funding tied to this plan.
Some of those are basically pipe dreams.
Yes.
Yeah.
A lot of these are basically pipe dreams.
Oh, okay.
But there's.
But if funding comes available, if the county commissioners adopt this, it shows okay, there is community support. So, if NC-280 gets approved and a multi-use path is put in, there has been a lot of outreach about it. If Lake Coxaway finds funding for their trail. It's in their plan, and if it might be in a plan adopted by a county commissioner. So right now there's no funding, and that's why these may not be developed for 30 to 50 years, or maybe never. But it is a starting point to discuss these.
Now, even that McNeely Bridge, it was built below Toxaway Dam, is wide enough to accommodate what they're talking about here.
Probably so.
Then there's the Brevard Transylvania County interface, which again, there's projects identified, but the type of project depends on the connection and the location. So Neely Road is identified, the Greenville Highway connecting the existing bike path to Half Simpson Park is identified. The Brevard College Greenway, and then Old Hendersonville Road. There was also a regional or other neighborhood counties, and in the region they've looked at a French Broad Greenway along the French Broad. Again, that is one of those that may happen, may never happen. But it is identified in case there is a French Broad Greenway that develops from here to Asheville.
I'll take it that red line is the acoustic. What is the red
line? The red line are those shared use paths that are already on the ground.
Oh.
So it's the Brevard bike path.
Okay, right.
So the red line is what is on the ground now. The orange line is what Brevard has, there are the projects that are in development. So Wilson Road, the Davidson River Connector, Asheville Highway, Caldwell.
One of those goes out to the old tannery, doesn't it?
This orange line out here is the one that Brevard is actively trying to install now, and it's the tannery project up in here. The Brevard owned land. Yeah. And then there's the bike routes. One of the things that was mentioned in the public input sessions is there's all these priority projects for road cyclists, and there's these shared use paths. But what about my mountain biking? We have these awesome, world-renowned trails for advanced mountain bikers, but there's no trails for kids. So is there a way to incorporate a mountain bike training ground in future parks that are developed or in different areas? And again, that might be privately funded or it might be part of park development. Well, implementation is dependent on board of commissioners and those that get involved. The plan highlights North Carolina Bicycle Route 8, which is the Southern Highlands bike route that goes through Transylvania County from the Blue Ridge Parkway over to Henderson County. It also highlights the Hellbender Regional Trail System that is in the very beginning stages, but is identified in the Henderson County Greenway Plan as a priority.
Would that be like a greenway from Rosman to Brevard?
It may include that stretch of the shared use path between Rosman and Brevard, yeah.
Didn't we specifically take that out of the county 2020 comprehensive plan?
We took out the specific mentions of we took out the specific mention of the Yocusta Trail. So you all kept it wide, saying support the development of multi-use paths through Transylvania County and connecting to neighboring counties. But you didn't specifically mention a trail. So the Yocusta Trail is not mentioned other than in the background of the comprehensive plan.
Joy?
Yes.
Does the state own all of the right-of-way for what was years ago going to be the four-lane divided highway 64 out towards Rosman? You know, they own the right-of-way, and it's even been graded, subgraded out past Cherryfield.
Right.
But do they own the rest of that all the way? It's just not been graded yet.
Mm-hmm.
So in addition to the infrastructure, there's bicycle facility maintenance, there's greenway trail maintenance. If you build it, you have to maintain it.
Does it include potholes?
On the road.
Terrible.
Yeah.
Well, that was the question somebody asked in Lake Toxwell. It was, if we build bike lanes on 281 and 64, can we pull the signs up and just drive on?
Oh. It has the Watch For Me media campaign. As I said, I foresee that this changes to be more broad. It has capitalizing on the bicycle events. It has speed limit reductions and traffic calming in specific areas. What has been mentioned at public input sessions most frequently is the speed limit on 276 between the Pisgah Forest intersection and the Ranger Station. It's 50 or 55 miles an hour.
It's so fast.
Exactly. And so for it to be reduced, we need the county commissioners to recommend that it be reduced because it is a U.S. highway. And so U.S. highway for that straight stretch has a 55. I think it's 50.
I don't even like to walk it.
It might be 55, though. I really don't.
Well, actually, it's about 70, but...
Right. But they have so many tubers, and they have so many bikes, and they have so many cars. That's something. Yeah.
U.S. highways are generally considered transportation corridors for the purpose of commerce and moving traffic, basically. Mm-hmm. Originally, they were set up that way. But now we're getting the recreation uses brought on them to where the federal highways are no longer routes of commerce, so to say, as they are just another route.
Chapter 4 is the key steps in project development opportunities and partners and implementation. This is where you all are identifying. In areas that have heavy development of subdivisions and zoning and a heavy push towards multiple modes of transportation, they often require developers to install infrastructure as part of the development. Most of the key project locations are not necessarily where the subdivisions are going to take place. And Transylvania County doesn't own roads and will not take ownership of roads. NCDOT takes the ownership of the roads. And so there's a question of, is that possible here? If the subdivision ordinance was updated, would it include that for locations along key priority projects? That would be up to planning board when they look at the subdivision ordinance at that time. And that's why you're identified, because it is a tool used elsewhere. Performance measures and facility development methods, most of those are in the appendix. Are there any? Here is the research on the bicycle pull-offs. Begin work on priority projects, update county policies. Begin or continue building partnerships. It says county municipal. I think it will be revised to say county continue building partnerships, period, because it's going to be nonprofits, it's going to be municipalities, it's going to be everyone to implement this, if it gets implemented. So the pages you see here have already been modified. This was the early December version, but you received the updated version in your agenda packets. Do you all have any questions, comments, recommendations? I see notes.
Did they mention how there would have to be increased enforcement on speed limits at all on these heavily traveled roads for bikers? Because, you know, safety issues? I don't know if that was in there.
It might be in the watch for me section.
Any other questions, comments, recommendations?
I just have a really hard time engaging in a bicycle plan. And I have a hard time knowing that the county is spending so much time and effort on bicycles. And I know it's kind of the flavor of the month for marketing and all that, but the state, the DOT built bicycle lanes from Western Carolina University to Silva about 12 years ago, and I drive through there probably 5 or 10 times a week. And in 10 or 12 years, I've seen 2 bicycles on
them.
And when we worked on the comprehensive plan for the county, we looked at the numbers for Division 14, and it's the least funded DOT division in the state. Any way you look at it, population, lane miles, vehicles traveled, any way you slice it. Transylvania County is the least funded county in Division 14, and the upper end of the county where I live is the least funded end of the least funded county in the least funded division. And here we are talking about bicycles. The whole county has 1 mile of divided four lane with a 55 mile an hour speed limit from Freeman Gas to Harmony Corner. And that has to be a record in the whole state. There's no bypass around the barn. We're one of 3 counties in the state where the DOT has no plans for a major thoroughfare to touch the county. It's us and Ashe County and some other county. The guy with the DOT, I'm pretty good friends with, is the safety director for Divisions 13 and 14. So he handles everything from like the Marion, Morganton area west. And he tells me that of all the counties he deals with, Transylvania County is the least engaged of any county that he deals with. And here we are talking about bicycles. And I can't understand when we have so many road needs, there's so many substandard roads, why aren't we spending this time on roads that help and benefit all of us? And that's, it's just hard for me to get over that. And I mean, I'm like you, Kimsey. I look through here and I look at, you know, they talk about the benefits of these different trails and all, and I mean, they're pretty high-in-the-sky projections of the economic benefits. And, I mean, basically, if you read the Coosa Trail Plan, we're all going to lose 40 pounds and live 30 years longer and retire at 40 because the trail came to town. And it,
I have a hard time coming to grips with spending the money on bike facilities when we have so many road facilities that need upgrading. Another thing in this, the economic benefits, the Rotary Club Fisher Forest, they have their salt on the Carolinas. They pre-register, I think it's 1,200, and they admit about 1,500 riders, and they get that. And if you are downtown, they cross the finish line, load their bike, and drive out of town. Because there's no place for those people to stay much in the county. And there is in Hendersonville and Asheville. There are other things in Asheville that attract them. Some of them bring their families. Many don't. And yet, you know, again, they talk about the economic impact of that. I'm sure there's some. I'm sure the motels are full that weekend. But there's no way we can accommodate in this county, in Brevard, for those 1,500 bike riders, particularly some of them have families. We don't have the facilities for that. So where is the economic impact of that? And I'm a heretic on this because I don't think we've got our heads on straight about what we need economically in the county. And I'm glad we have hikers, bikers, retirees, and tourists, but that's not a good, healthy economy. It's just not. Because we don't have many other things to support those kinds of things. We don't have moderate-priced family restaurants. Whereas we don't have an Applebee's or an Olive Garden, any of that kind of stuff. We go from McDonald's to Square Root or in at the bar, and those are not cheap. So I do have a problem seeing a lot of money spent on bike facilities, but I know that a lot of people in this area do ride bikes. Like I say, I think they'll be mowing the grass, but that's beside the point.
It's my understanding.
We're going to have it. I mean, I think we're. Don't put this in the minutes. I have a friend who used to say in situations like this that you would pee in a wet rope. And to oppose this, I think that's what you'd be doing. It's just too much push for it, too many people who think it has to be. So we probably ought to go ahead and give them something to mull over and... As a maybe it'll happen someday, but I would hope that we have improvements to a lot of our roads before we go build a log and build a lot of bike facilities. It's my opinion.
Can you know where a lot of this came from? After Acosta and DuPont closed, this county, you say it like it is, we have nothing to offer a large industry. We have no county water, we have no county sewer, we have minimal road standards. We're a long way from the closest interstate. If an industry like DuPont or Acoustic needed clean water, yeah, we've got all the clean water in the world.
Right.
But I haven't seen them yet since the two plants closed. And so technically, saying it like it is, we have nothing to offer to bring big industry here.
Well, I think, personally, I think we'd be better off spending the most good money on something. Let's put in some infrastructure. Let's identify, and there are industrial sites in this county. Let's identify those, and let's build infrastructure to them and say,
ready. I had a real estate person years ago ask me about when they widened Highway 280 to Turkey Bend, look at these beautiful fields out here that we can develop. And all that. Well, you can't put a septic field in fill material. So you'd have to have a package plant. And getting a package plant to discharge into Boylston Creek and all that, that ain't going to happen. So what do we have to offer?
Yeah. I will sit here and agree with what's been said. But let's not lose track or focus in that this plan is not necessarily saying this needs to be a priority. It's getting us ready for the DOT. And when the DOT does act on something, it's money that the DOT is either going to spend to improve our infrastructure or not spend if we don't have a plan.
And it's going to happen.
Yeah.
It's inevitable.
So
DOT gets a pot of money that can only be spent on bicycle and pedestrian infrastructure from the federal government. And so if they don't spend it on bicycle pedestrian infrastructure here, it goes somewhere else.
Yeah.
Well, I haven't lived here as long as many of you, but I've been here 35 years. And all the years I've lived in Western North Carolina, the bike issue has been prevalent. So I don't necessarily agree that this is a fad or a fly-by-night issue. It's a very real issue that people have been struggling with, and different communities handle it in different ways. And what I'm hearing right now is people saying, oh, the bikes are really annoying, I get stuck behind a bike, or you know, they're dangerous. But they don't want to really commit to solving the problem by looking at some, you know, real-world solutions. And that's where I get a little bit confused, because it is an issue, and I get caught behind bicycles on the Blue Ridge Parkway, but I get behind slow cars much more often. And if I were to have to add up all the minutes I get behind a camper on the parkway versus a bicycle, a camper wins every time. So,
yeah, but the parkway is designed for that.
Right. There's tons of pull-offs on the parkway, and no one uses. But the point to me is, I think this is a very large issue. I actually do believe there is a big economic impact, because and not to be offensive, but I may be the only person in here that actually rides a bicycle. So I actually do know people who, you know, they actually are a lot of people to come here and stay. And, you know, I don't know what that impact is. I think that's a big problem, where we don't really have a good understanding of, you know, how valuable this resource is. And I think that would be something that's really
really key to find out, because I agree, before we go whole hog into something, I think we need to know what the realities of it is, and what we can do to prevent future accidents or help both sides of this, because I get it, I've been behind bikes when you get a whole long troop of guys, and it is incredibly aggravating. And it's those people who are like, you are doing nothing to help the bike being caught. I've been on the other side of that too, where I've been run off the road by people who, when I'm by myself, they just don't like bikes, and that's just what it is.
Well, so pushing a little bit, maybe you'll run in the ditch.
Yeah, I know. I always try to like drive it.
You know, Daryl's right, though. This is going to happen, so we may as well try to have what progressive input we can.
I understand that. That's the only reason I would. It's the only reason I sat and tried to read most of this and not be too judgmental. As he said, I don't know what it's going to be 20 years from now. Maybe that would be the primary way of transportation in this county, this bicycle. I'm not about that, but
I'm going to meet you.
I'm not going to be here, so I'm not
going to. Right, yeah.
But I understand the need for this. I'm kind of like Mac. We spent a lot of time on it, a lot of effort, a lot of that. To do some of it is going to take quite a bit of money and construction activity. And I'd rather see it used to straighten out 64 up through Toxic Way or widen.
See, that's where this comes in beautiful. Because when they do decide to straighten out 64, they'll put some bike lanes because we have a plan. You know, that's where this will come in, and we're spending grant money to achieve it.
But a lot of what it does is the project gets estimated, and then it's so expensive that it moves down the tip list and it gets put off.
It can have that effect. Yeah,
the bridges have to be 20 feet wider.
Yeah. It can have that effect. You're right. Yeah. And as Bob said, this is one of the areas that like it or not, it's one of the areas that people are coming here for.
Right.
It's
I understand it.
You know, it's Lauren's correct. It's been biking has been around here for a while, but seems like in the last 8 or 10 years, it's really caught on. We've gotten manufacturers in here. So it's one of the few things we got going for our local economy. So
that's what I'd like to see work is like, let's get the people who make the bicycles.
Yes.
Let's go on here. Yeah. Make the equipment.
Firstly, I'd be chicken to
these mid level industries who employ 20 to 40 people.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not going to get, let's just be honest, you're not going to get another Kusa. So you get this medium-sized industry, and I think there's a lot of potential for that to happen.
Yes.
And then you just piggyback onto this huge outdoor rec thing that's happening and has been happening.
That one economic benefit was, what's his name, that moved into the new building down here on Acosta Road?
Tom Benson.
Yeah, it's going to increase his manufacturing. Yeah. That was going to add so many jobs. I mean, that is a benefit.
Well, see, that was good.
It's in the infrastructure was there. See, that's like, were you talking about it, something we listed?
And if we had more of that kind of, like you said, if we had more of that kind of stuff, manufacturing or assembling or better than worrying about the cell phone in Carolina with how many people.
And I look for any kind of things for our young people to do here instead of having to move away.
That's why a lot of people move away. There's no real livable wage jobs here.
So what do we need to do tonight?
You need the action from us, or is this?
At the last meeting, you discussed whether or not you would recommend it for the county commissioners to approve it. It is not finalized yet.
Okay.
And so I would be hesitant for you to approve the draft that's in front of you, because I think based on the public input, there will be revisions. And you've heard some of the public input tonight, but there are a lot more comments that Karen has been very helpful in typing up. And it will be looking at them and really seeing whether the plan meets the community, what the community says it needed. So you're welcome to.
I don't think it would serve any point for us to do that since it's going to be changing.
The Parks and Rec Commission will hear a presentation on February 19th.
Which commission?
The Parks and Rec Commission. The Parks and Rec Master Plan identified walking as the number one recreation and exercise that people wanted to see more of. And so a bicycle plan with multi-use trails identified in it can serve their needs to identify how they can help to provide those walking amenities. And so they will be also considering it. I don't know whether they will have a recommendation for the county commissioners.
Okay. All right. Item C, noise ordinance review.
So, in November, we brought to you the need to look at the noise ordinance. There are a lot of resources that you have been sent electronically. One of the resources that you asked us to get is information from the City of Brevard on how having a decibel level in the noise ordinance helps or hurts the enforcement capability of the police department. Because we heard from Eddie Gunter that not having decibel levels created subjectivity and uncertainty from the sheriff's department when they went out to enforce the noise complaints. I have spoken with Chief Harris, and he says that with a decibel level, there is still subjectivity because you have to determine what the ambient noise is. Where do you get that ambient noise? Measurement. Do you get it when the obtrusive noise is occurring? How do you know what the ambient noise is if the harmful noise is taking place at the same time? So the thought that including decibel levels may reduce subjectivity may or may not be accurate. So the planning board was asked to consider whether or not the noise ordinance should be reviewed and updated. The planning board does not have to change it in any way. You could say, you know, after looking at the recommendation from the school of government on the case law that has taken place, decibel levels doesn't seem to be consistently used by counties and municipalities in North Carolina. Looking at Polk County, they chose not to update it or include decibel levels. Looking at City of Brevard, they did. They did include it. And so one of the things that we heard from Eddie Gunter was that there was not a system for a one-time event that may violate the noise ordinance to get a permit. And so whether the planning board chooses to include decibel levels or not include decibel levels, you may consider whether revising it to allow a permitting process for one-time events may be what the planning board needs to consider. Or you may just leave it alone and say it's serving a need as it is, and there may not be benefit to improving it. So I'm going to leave it up to you, because I don't think there is a right answer.
I think we certainly need to consider the permitting process for events.
Because currently what happens is if you're lucky, the event promoter comes to the sheriff's and says, we're going to do this thing and don't arrest us, right? I mean, that's kind of the concept. And
but there's a gray area of they can let the sheriff's department know, but if people call, they have to answer.
Yeah, they have to answer.
And, you know, I really believe that the, you know, having played a role in the drafting of this ordinance, it was intended for noises that are not temporary, but that are ongoing. It was intended for, you know, issues that are pretty consistent. Whether that be an event that's consistent or, you know, a sound of some nature that is continually a nuisance, not a one-time event. But I can see, you know, how they're having the issue they are with it. That gives the sheriff's department some clarity and some understanding in those cases. And I think that will provide them some help. If we review and add a permitting process for one-time events, however we want to word that, or one-time events, temporary events, whatever the case may be.
Other than the exempted,
yes. That aren't specifically mentioned in the exempted event. If it's going to be an event that happens every other weekend,
then that's not.
That can't get a permit, you know.
If it's a concert at the Brevard Stadium, and it's Bill Rose and his foot stompers, and the decibels are 5,000. Maybe they need a temporary permit, you know. But if he's going to be there every weekend, then that's a different story.
Yeah.
I mean, or if it's a, well, there's other things that would be reluctant on an ongoing basis, but on a one-time event.
Yeah.
Darrell, having been in on that original write-up on this,
yes.
What do you think about the current status of exactly what it says right now?
We drafted that with the intention of keeping it simple. We were presented with a noise ordinance that was 20-plus pages, I believe. It addressed everything. And we felt like it was too restrictive. And so we went with this one because we felt like it addressed what needed to be addressed. It was fairly simple to understand and not a drawn-out, complicated ordinance like we felt like we had with that one that was 20-plus pages. I think it still serves the purpose. Obviously, there's areas that could be improved. Since it's been in place now for about 10 years, I believe. I would advocate for adding a decibel level there, with the understanding it's not going to hold up in court.
Might not hold up in court.
It won't hold up in court. I don't think it will at all. What it will provide, I believe, is what the city of Brevard is seeing, where they have compliance from people for which they get complaints. The policeman goes out there and says, the ordinance says you can't be over X decimals. Decimal reader says you're over X decimals. We need to mitigate it. And they comply and mitigate it. If that person decides to get an attorney and calls a stink, county is just going to have to let it ride. In the city of Brevard, as I understand it, they're not taking those to court. But it does, when you have the ordinance and you have the ability to show it's over, you get some natural compliance the help mitigate situation. Is that, am I making sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, with the decibel readers comes the fact that you got to buy them. You have to purchase them, and you're going to have to train deputies to use them. There's going to have some financial implications for the county.
And constant keeping them calibrating.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's not something you throw on a shelf, okay, we got one of these next time we get a call. I believe with 165 calls, 160 plus calls, I think it was 65,
yeah,
that they've had, has it been the past year or less than a year?
January, February, March, April, May, June, July, August, September, October, November. It didn't have
almost
any in December, but it didn't go through December. It went through November 30th.
Okay.
165 in 3 months?
No, it's January to November.
Okay.
11 months.
Of 2018 or
how many citations did they write?
Did you notice most of those were May, June, and July?
Where were the calls from? That would be another parameter. Were they all from?
They did not readily have that data. We asked, and it would require more information than what was available.
I think, you know, let's get a... Let's have staff talk to the Sheriff's Department and get their opinion on adding decibel reading to the ordinance. They're the ones that have to do the job. If they think it'll make their job easier, I think it's something we should consider, with the understanding that it's only going to force natural compliance. If someone raises a stink and decides to hire an attorney, then you know it's probably not going to hold up in court. But you still got the citation and the fact that on the opinion of the sheriff's deputy, that the noise ordinance was being violated. You can take the decibel reading out of it altogether and still prosecute it if they choose to do so in the nature which the current ordinance allows them to. They may not want that. The sheriff's department, the deputies may think that that'll be helpful. They may not. They may not want the. I think we should get an opinion from them before we pursue that, for sure. But I can see how that would be helpful, and I would expect from the way that the chief deputy was talking that it's probably something that they would like to have. It'd make their job a little easier. Because right now, as the ordinance is written, it's totally subjective and up to the responding officer.
Mm-hmm.
As to what they're seeing and hearing. And this would allow them to somehow quantify their opinion.
Interesting, it peaks in the summer, which is...
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. And that
people July, are out here.
You know, Camp Milwaukee puts on quite a fireworks display. I kind of agree with you. I think it's one of those things would be good to have. And if the deputies think that it will be of some use, I kind of lean toward it. Let's take a look at it and upgrade it.
I believe we had Eddie come and speak to it. Chief Deputy Gunner, come and speak to us. It may be good for the planning board to get some written recommendations from either the chief deputy or sheriff or whomever as to ways they feel like we could address the noise ordinance and make their job easier.
Yeah, because they have to enforce it.
Yeah. Noise ordinance is a pain in the butt. That was the worst thing I dealt with as a commissioner. And it's hard. You just have the areas where these type of issues are most easiest dealt with neighbors being neighborly.
Mm-hmm.
But when that breaks down, you know, now you're interjecting deputies into a hostile situation. They need to have the ability to handle it and handle it in an effective manner. And I think there are areas right now with that ordinance where they're not able to do so. So
I would have a hard time supporting changing the ordinance in a way that we know is not going to be upheld in court. I mean, that, if it's not something that's enforceable, then to me, the county doesn't need to be coming out trying to do something that's not enforceable. That's personally. And you have to remember, too, everyone has a different expectation of what an obnoxious noise is, what too loud is.
Yeah.
And certainly just because there are complaints doesn't mean that every complaint was a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that. And the other thing we have to remember is this is a county ordinance and it's not a subdivision ordinance or a homeowners association ordinance. It's for the whole county, and you know, there are certainly places in this county where you can move to that have all kinds of restrictions, but it's not the county's job to turn itself into one big homeowners association or subdivision.
Yeah.
I mean, the ordinance should be to eliminate the worst, most obnoxious problems and generally leave people as free as possible. That would be my philosophy in anything we do with the ordinance.
Now, Mac, if we try to make it as enforceable as possible, that still doesn't necessarily mean that the courts are going to, quote-unquote, waste their time on something like that, meaning that they're going to be looking at other priorities. Not that this is not important, but, you know, we could make the most perfect ordinance and they still choose not to prosecute.
Right. Yeah.
Which, if I remember correctly, when they had the racetrack up at Cherryfield up there, that ended up going into civil litigation, didn't it?
It did.
Mm-hmm. Was the county really, I mean, the county wasn't really able to shut them down, were they?
No, the civil litigation is what brought that on. And I can tell you for a fact that what the county tried to do was mitigate a situation within a community up there, and try to find. We did our best to try to find a resolution that would allow the track to be open and the community to maintain some semblance of how it had existed for 100 plus years up to that point. But it got to be one of those situations where the feelings were so hard between the neighbors and the track owner that nobody was willing to give an inch. Kind of like this shutdown.
But the county tried.
Oh, yeah, we tried. We tried. And then we weren't necessarily trying to shut down the track. It was when they weren't complying with the noise ordinance, they were issuing citation after citation after citation. Was thrown out of criminal court because we had a terrible judge on the bench, which has since been promoted, unfortunately. And it was some nonsense as opposed to why it was tossed out. I can't remember all the details. But it ended up going civil route.
No matter the best that we do, there's still, even with the decibel meters, there's still going to be some subjectivity.
Oh, yeah.
But there'll be less. But you know, I'll give you a good example. And now, Mac, I haven't been up to your all's quarry in a long time, but, you know, you can hear operations from Penrose Quarry during the day. When the wind's right, you can hear it all over, almost halfway up to Cedar Mountain. Mm-hmm. Nobody complains about it. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just one of those. You know, when a goose did a new
in
operation, nobody complained about the shift change whistles.
Yeah.
And all. You know, some things just were exceptional.
Yeah.
So what do you think?
I think we should get a recommendation from the Sheriff's Department, ask staff to get specific recommendations from the Sheriff's Department as to how they feel like any changes that could be made to help them. I don't know that the, it's just my opinion, and if I felt like it did, I'd tell you, even though I had a hand in the initial draft. I don't feel like it needs a major overhaul. It probably is time for a tweak and a look at.
Okay.
And I think it's a consideration. I think you put everything on the table. Do we still need it? Do we want to have it?
Yeah.
There's a lot of validity to what Max said. You don't want the Sheriff's Department being a property owners association enforcement arm of one anyway.
The beauty of this is one of the shortest ordinances, you know, on any of the county ordinances that I've seen. It's plain and simple. With, I think I really see some common sense in this, but, you know, everybody knows where common sense went. But this is not terribly complex.
Yeah. Something else I'd like to know from the Sheriff's Department that I didn't really get a good feel when Chief Deputy Gunner was here was, were they looking for something to make it easier for them to write citations? Were they looking for something that made it easier for them to not write citations once they got there and had complaints? I mean, he just said they had a lot of problems with it, but I didn't really understand if they were having a hard time writing things that they felt like would stick, or they were going to a lot of complaints that they didn't feel like needed to be cited, but it was hard to walk away. Because, I mean, anytime somebody calls the Sheriff's Department over their neighbor, they're just basically in divorce mode. You know? I mean, things have already gone south.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He seemed frustrated by the fact that it depended on who went out. It might be a different report, you know.
So, Harold, is yours a motion, or do we need to make a motion on it, or just a general recommendation?
I think a recommendation.
Include it in the next, if you can get the things he asked for, include it in next month's mail out, and we'll take a look at it.
I think at that point the board can look at the recommendations from the Sheriff's Department,
right,
and figure out how we want to move forward.
Okay.
All right. Let's see. Item, moving on to new business. Item A, planning board membership.
Good, bad, or indifferent, I think I'm going to be reappointed next Monday as a meeting, I think.
So we had two planning board members whose terms are up at the end of January, Kinsey Jackson and Daryl Hogwood. And so they have the opportunity to be reappointed, or they can elect to move on. And so
I guess now is a good time as any for me to let the board know that I will not be seeking reappointment. I think this is the best board I've ever served on. I really do.
Why mess it up?
I think it's the best board I've served on in spite of myself. But I've got a lot of obligations and responsibilities that I feel like someone else could come on and give a lot more attention to what's going on here. Those obligations for me outside of this are related to my kids, and they come first. And I know all of us are busy. That's something we could all argue, but not a reflection on the board by any means or any of you all. I really been back and forth over should I continue, should I not, and one of the big pros was this is a great functioning board. We tackle some really difficult issues and some big things for the county, and I feel like we're able to do that we're able to find recommendations, solutions to issues, not because we all feel the same way or all have the same view, but because we're able to come together, figure out something that we can agree on, and make a recommendation and move forward. There's a lot of boards in this county, in this state, and in this country that could take a lesson from the way we do business here. And that's our personal interests aren't what's most important. It's what's best for the county. And I know this board will continue going well without me, and I'll miss being a part of it. But I appreciate you all having the faith in me to let me be the chairman over the last year. I've really enjoyed it. Like I said, y'all have made it easy. So I appreciate you.
Well, you've made it easy for us too. You're good at it.
Thank you.
All your experience, you know, being on the county commissioners, and just you're a native. You know what's going on here.
Thank you. I'm always a phone call away. Feel free to give me a ring. I will answer. I may not the first time if I don't recognize your number, but leave me a message and I'll get right back to you.
Your kind of experience, though, goes a long way to make good common sense decisions that benefit everybody in this county.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Bob. Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate your service on this board and as a commissioner, too.
Thank you.
Not much peaceful time when you're a commissioner. Seems like everywhere you go, somebody has to be in your ear.
Yeah. I still get my ear bent occasionally. People don't realize I'm not on the board, and it's been a while.
I do appreciate it, and I appreciate the way you've helped this board work together and work things out. And, I mean, rightly, we have a very diverse group, and that's what it should be.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I really do appreciate the kind words. It means a lot to you. And like I said, I'm always a phone call away. Anytime that I can help you with anything or you got any questions, I'll be happy to talk to you about it. So feel free to give me a call.
One of the things I'll say too is I don't think there's a lot of applications in this board. So if you know someone,
Quickly. Yes.
It was like 14 or something.
Oh, yeah.
And those applications are good for 2 years.
Oh, good.
Last year, we went a few months that we didn't have a quorum. We couldn't even really meet. Year before.
I think that was the year before.
Last year it was September.
Yeah. Anything else on that item? Okay. All right. Planning and community development update.
So in addition to the planning board membership being on the board of commissioners agenda for January 28th, the small area planning process that you all recommended sending to them back in December will likely be on the agenda. I have been told it will be, but that it's a tight agenda, a full agenda, I should say. And so I don't know for sure until it comes out. But when it comes out, I expect that the small area planning process will be on it. I encourage you all to come to that meeting. You are instrumental in editing it and creating it as it is. And so your attendance will show support for the process and will help the county commissioners understand where it came from.
Is that meeting an evening or
morning? It is.
An evening.
The comprehensive transportation plan, not the bike plan, but the comprehensive transportation plan update will also likely be on that agenda for that Board of Commissioners meeting. And so Vicki Eastland with the Land of Sky Regional Planning Organization will be presenting on the comprehensive transportation plan.
Will that be meeting is the 28th.
January 28th.
It's not next Monday.
A week from Monday.
I had written in a while ago that they were going to discuss that property behind the Boys and Girls Club. It's been a while since I wrote that.
It's
still on there.
So there's a lot of items. It might be a late meeting.
A comment about that small area plan situation. I got Max epistle
from Jackson County.
And you may remember when the first meeting, I missed the second one, but the first meeting we had with those folks, my concern was that they planned themselves into a corner where they didn't have the ability to allow some commercial development and that sort of thing. And reading what he sent out, pretty much what has happened there is that it's very difficult to do anything. I told you then that it came from my experience on Sanibel Island. And one of the things there, what precipitated there, they allowed no chain development on that island, like McDonald's, Burger King. The result is, for a family that goes there for a vacation, there's no place to get a reasonably priced hamburger.
I can verify that. We were there last night.
Are reasonably priced for any kind
except
of food.
For that
there is one carryout place that you can get a meal for a reasonable price. But you go to their restaurant. I was there 2 years ago, and two of us went. The damn bill was $100 for two people. So I didn't go back to that one. But that's not out of the norm there. And that, for a tourist destination, that's unreasonable.
Yeah.
And whatnot. So that's a little bit of my concern about the Cedar Mountain plan, is that they haven't boxed themselves out of some commercial development. If I lived out there, I would want to have some kind of a store that I could go get a loaf of bread or a package of lunch meat or something like that without having to come to the bar.
There's Dollar General out there. But the planning board made a lot of public input times so that it represents more than just two property owners' desires. And so the whole community will have an opportunity to provide input on what the plan ultimately has. And we
put in there too that each step along the way there is information provided to the commissioners and or action required from the commissioners for it to continue, so that they can see if it's getting off the rails and ending up like a Cashers, the Glimble situation that he shared with us. And then, if it got to that point, then, I think that process is no longer supported by the commissioners and it goes by the wayside or is forced to be reorganized or whatever the case may be. But I think we got some safety nets in there to keep that kind of situation from happening. And it's requiring buy-in. You never can get buy-in from everybody in the community, but you need some buy-in from at least a large part of the
I say I missed the meeting after he sent that out. That was basically what I was needed to say, but I hope that the plan didn't do that.
There is no plan.
We're coming up on step five.
What is coming up on January 28th is the piece of paper that you have in your hand that the planning board modified in December will be going to the county commissioners for consideration and approval. and that will create a pathway and a process for Cedar Mountain to use as they develop their plan. They're up at the top. They're up in project initiation, project foundation. There are some steps that they need in project initiation to move forward with the project foundation. And so what the county commissioners are considering on January 28th is the small area planning process. Not the Cedar Mountain plan, not the Lake Toxaway plan. It is just the small area planning process. What is the pathway for communities who would like to look at developing a small area plan to help direct growth or help retain their community character?
Cedar Mountain is a few steps advanced in that plan, but it's, I'm sure they'll have to go back and start at step one, even though it'll be kind of quick for them since they got some of it already. They'll have to go back and start at step one and start through the process.
About the first thing they'll have to do is the Board of Commissioners will appoint the Cedar Mountain Planning Group.
Yes.
So that it's not like a self-appointed, self-elected group. It's the commissioners will elect a group to follow the plan.
Right.
And I'm sure some of the people that have been involved so far will be in that group, and then there'll be others too, probably.
Is that everything, Joy?
The Joint Historic Preservation Commission had a request for proposals go out to select a contractor to conduct the oral history interviews and architectural survey of historical resources that have significance for the African American communities in Transylvania County. And so that closed on Wednesday. The JHPC subcommittee will be reviewing those proposals and with the State Historic Preservation Office and selecting a contractor. Mark Burrow's position, otherwise known as the Planning and Community Development Director position, has been posted. And so the county is accepting applications for that. And it closes the 1st or 2nd of February. So. We have Karen Henderson here tonight, and we'll have her again, hopefully, in February. She is stepping in until a director is hired, and while the winter is happening, because you'll go back to the greenhouse March 1st.
March 1st. I stay here is March 1st.
Like a good plan.
So we have some temporary
filling a huge need. So thank you, thank you.
Yes, indeed, indeed. And those are the big things.
Okay. All right. Anyone have anything else? New business. Okay. Moving on to, since we don't have public here, board member comments.
Darrell, all I can say is well done. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
You kind of set the stage for how this board functions, and I'll agree with you. Of all the boards that I've ever worked with, this is the most common sense board that discusses things with numerous technical backgrounds in here to come up with the best answer possible. And I'm just proud to be a part of that.
I was an advocate, you know, for the plan. That's how I kind of got involved with the planning board initially. And I saw at meetings, you know, they didn't go as smoothly as ours. And this is fun. This is enjoyable. And we will miss you.
Thank you.
We'll see you around.
Yes, you'll certainly see me around, and I'm sure y'all will continue to function just as smoothly.
I'd like to echo that I thought you did a super job.
Thanks, sir.
And as I think I've said once before, the same thing that Bob said, I've been on several boards. This is by far the best one I've been on. Even the one that I hope to be on. It's a hell of a lot better than that one.
Yeah.
On the thing and whatnot. But, and I think it's because of the makeup, and it might be a... I don't know whether we could some way say, well, this is the kind of makeup that we would like to have. You've got practical people, engineers, architects, the whole, you know, as Bob said, we get all that put together and come up most of the time with a pretty good recommendation.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, at the end, we have... The good thing about this board is we don't lose sight of what our real end goal is, and that's what's best for the county. Mm-hmm. You know, there's things we've all compromised on. We'd prefer to see a little bit different, but we realize, yeah, I can swallow that. It'll work. And I think that's what we're supposed to do. Try to come to agreement rather than putting your stake in the ground and standing there and not being willing to move. That doesn't get us anywhere.
You know, we haven't seen the gallery full of people raising hell about anything.
This board's got to be right. That's right. Hey, you consider we've ran through a lot of stuff. We've you know, assigned ordinance and all these different ordinances that we've considered and reviewed and things of that nature, and typically that turns out some folks. So it's not like we don't have an audience because we're not doing anything. So,
and they often say something, you know.
Yeah.
They like to see the way we work together.
And one of the things I think that helps make us an efficient board is staff.
Absolutely.
After Mark left, I mean, Joyce carrying two backpacks now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And good job.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for mentioning staff. I'd sit here after I made my previous comments and thought I did not recognize staff and just talked about us here, but we function well because of staff. You do a wonderful job.
Yeah, it's a joy to work with you. You can put that in a minute. Yeah. Sorry, I'll grow up one day.
I'd like to
thank all of you, Darryl, you, and I mean, I know you're on your way out, but you've done a really good job here, and staff, and everyone in between has really put the county first, and I think that's the key. I mean, we can all come at things from different angles, different opinions, and different philosophies, but as long as we're all trying to put the county first, then we should be able to work out what is really best, and it's not always all of what I want, it's not all of what anyone else wants, it's just the six or seven of us together should be able to come up with better solutions than any one or two of us separately ever could.
You know, Mike, you take the legacy of looking at your family and what your family's done across this county over the last, 60 years or so and so forth, and your dad and the bridge named after him. That stuff doesn't just happen.
Yeah.
Right.
And Darryl, you know, you've been around the block a few times.
Yeah, I'm still riding that bike, too.
Well, you'll have a new bike plan one day.
Yeah, that's right. I'll have water pass. Yeah. All right. Thank you all for your kind comments again. I appreciate it. I will miss serving with you guys and gals. But y'all keep up the good work. I know you will. Like I said, feel free to call me anytime. All right. If nobody has any further comments, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn. Second. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Thank you all. Can I borrow a pen? Sign this with. I think so. That'll work. I like those sharpie pens. Thank you. Appreciate it. Same here. Take care. Thank you.
I got all of them.
The best.